हरिः ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगराधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे So now Arjuna and Krishna are speaking now on the Bhagavad Gita and the battlefield. So Arjuna has made his point, Krishna count, he gave a point to Arjuna, and now Arjuna now is returning, his thoughts then on what was said. Still shaking, Arjuna asked, "My dear Krishna, although it is right to kill sinful enemies, how can I fire arrows at men who are worthy of my worship? I would rather become a beggar than win this world at the cost of their lives. Even if they are afflicted with greed, they are still my superiors. What religious principles sanction slaying them? If we win the war, then all our ill-gotten gains will be tainted with their blood. It seems to me that winning would be no better than losing. Victory is in any event uncertain, but in this case it is not even desirable. How could I live after causing my relatives' deaths? Yet they are standing before me with upraised weapons." Arjuna could see no way out of his situation. The Kauravas were clearly intent on killing him and his army. Still, he had no heart for the fight, nor did it seem religious. At the same time, his religious arguments had no effect on Krishna. We have to remember, religion comes from Krishna. There is no such thing as religion that's not coming from Krishna. So we can make up our own religions, but we'll make up our own religions according to, what modes of nature we're under. So the we see is that in nature, the laws that are there, those are all maybe the religion of the various items in the universe. Religion means the inherent nature of something you can't change. So a dog will act as a dog, cat is a cat, horse is a horse, bird is a bird. So in the same way is that everything has its nature, Earth works in one way, water in another, air in another. That's why there's all the sciences. They simply observe the laws of nature. So here is then he's pointing out that it didn't seem religious. They had no effect on Krishna because he's not considering, where do these natures come from? They come from Krishna, his potencies, his desire. And so therefore, if someone's going against that, you can't call it religious that they're going to go on. Otherwise, like you see, is that, okay, the criminal did something wrong, but he feels bad and this and that. Okay, but then how are you going to correct the situation? How are you going to deal? How there's going to be purification? All these different aspects. So if you just let it sentimentally go, the reaction for having done wrong is still there. It has to go somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Somebody steals something and afterwards they feel bad about it. But the reaction for stealing is still there. So unless there's something appropriate, then it can't be done. And then if by, then don't do it again and all that, the remorse is there. But that remorse is the purification. But it has to be sincere. Otherwise, if as soon as that incident's over and they're stealing again, then what's the point? Then something has to be done to correct the mentality. Right? So that's the consideration that Arjuna's not dealing with, is that what's going to correct the mentality of Duryodhana and his followers? Right? What will do that? And so for them, good instruction has been given for, over 500 pages, and he doesn't care less. So therefore, the only thing left, talk is over. Now the only thing is danda, is punishment. That's the only thing he'll understand. So in other words, up to the moment where basically he, is basically on the verge of death, that's the only time that he'll notice, well, maybe I was wrong. And even then, he might not. Right? So that's the difficulty here, is that people have to know actually what religion is. So much of the time, due to the mode of ignorance, people think religion is irreligion, irreligion is religion. But actually, the laws of nature are there. You can go against them. You can say, no, but we're free. We're doing what we want. And freedom is good. But the point is you can't misuse your freedom. Right? If you do just whatever you want that pleases you, you know, it's just like sometimes there would be these, I think it was in England, a club that was there of all the students that were from these very aristocratic families. And then, you know, on, you know, like weekends or something like that, where, you know, when they were not, didn't have to be in class in the school, they could go out. They would go out, they'd get drunk, they'd come back. And I think in one incident in the school they were in, because it was one of these very old style with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of these little glass windows, you know, and all that, you know, all stone and, you know, something very architecturally beautiful and very nice. And they went and threw rocks and broke over 600 windows. And for them, it was just good, clean fun. You know what I'm saying? So if it's just down to people can do what they want, then Manu also mentions that if you don't follow the rules, everyone will be fighting against each other. Everyone will be fighting. There will be complete chaos always, constantly. It's mentioned in Manu. So he's saying Dharma Shastra, but Duryodhana does what he wants, doesn't care for Shastra. Therefore, then Manu deals with that. So if you don't correct that, it will just filter down. So if Duryodhana does it and gets away with it, why won't other people do it? Then everybody will be doing it. If Duryodhana does it and all his brothers are there, but what, if they have it, what's to keep the brothers from fighting with each other? What's to keep, you know, the ministers? What's to keep the citizens? So everything will just fall apart. But it's thought that, oh no, but if people do what they want, then that's a good thing. But the point is yes, within the context of what is acceptable, you do what you want. Just like you go to a restaurant, and in the restaurant, let's say they have 20 items on the menu. You can choose, you have the freedom to choose from those items on the menu. You don't have, you can't go in there and say, please give me the you know, paneer tikka, like that, and they go, but we're an ice cream parlor. Do you want vanilla or chocolate or strawberry? No, I'll take the paneer tikka, yeah, like that. You don't have that freedom. So the point is, you have the freedom to choose which area you're going to work in, but within that, it has a context. This idea, no, I'll have freedom everywhere, at all times, all places, all circumstances. If everybody's doing that, there will only be chaos. And the point, if there's no rules, everybody will kill each other. Everyone will steal everything from each other. There'll be nothing left. And so that's the limit when you take it there, because you say, no, but everybody should be nice. Define nice, you know? That's the whole, be good, or what's good. That's the whole thing. So Shastra defines it, Dharma defines it. You follow that, everything works. Like we see before, those who are following, everything is going very nicely. Where they don't follow, problem. What was his duty now? There was only one person who could help him. He looked up at Krishna, who sat peacefully with the reins in his gloved hands. It was by Krishna's help that Arjuna and his brothers had survived so many difficulties. He was without doubt the wisest person. He would know what to do. Deciding to surrender himself to whatever Krishna advised, Arjuna said, "O Krishna, I am confused about my duty and have lost all composure due to weakness of heart. Surely I am being consumed by miserly and selfish considerations, but I am not able to overcome them. In this condition, I ask you to please tell me what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. I can see no means to drive away this grief. Even winning a prosperous kingdom equal to that of the gods will not assuage my sorrow. O Govinda, I will not fight." Right, so he surrendered, and he says that I can't see what to do, what's my duty, and all that, I'm suffering. And so you know these things, so please instruct me. You know, but at the same time he says, I won't fight. But basically, that's point is he sees there's no benefit, so he's just giving up. You know, it means this, he's doing nothing. It's not a positive thing. It's not like, okay, there's problems here. Well, what is the positive thing to do? But that's within your duties. It's your duties that define what should you do. Right? You know, because his idea was to go out to the forest. But that's not his duty. Right? His duty is, as a Kshatriya, is to protect the people. And so then that's what he has to accomplish. So he's talking about the duty, but as he said, he's confused. And there's so much material considerations there that he's bewildered. And so now he asks Krishna. Arjuna fell silent. Now it was up to Krishna to convince him. On the other side of the field, Bhishma looked with interest at Arjuna's solitary chariot in the middle of the two armies. Why was Arjuna not in position? He seemed to have dropped down in his chariot. Something was going on between him and Krishna. Bhishma raised his hand to hold back his forces. Was Krishna considering a final peace effort, even on the battlefield? Surely not. The conscience had already been blown to signal the beginning of the fight. Whatever Krishna was doing, Bhishma wanted to respect it. Right? Because we have to remember he's a Mahajan. So he's one of the 12 authorities on devotional service in the universe. So he's always absorbed in Krishna, but at the same time, as you perform according to your particular position that you're in, you perform your duties. And so he's doing that. As a Kshatriya, he does his duty. His duty is to protect the crown. He's doing that, even though the person on that seat is not that great. But the authority is with Dhritarashtra, not with him. That was the point he made before, that he would not rule. Otherwise, he could easily, in other words, if he had sat on the throne, we would not have this, whole Mahabharata and all this and that. It would have been another peacefully run, well-managed kingdom, like so many of the great personalities before, like Yayati Harishchandra, and all the great personalities, Maharaj Yadu, all these things. It would have been like that. But because of the arrangement, then he wasn't, taking that authority. He was just protecting to see that whoever was the authority could go on. And from that, it just happens to be that Duryodhana was the man, Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. If Yudhishthira had been crowned, he would be protecting him. So he's just doing his duty, but he himself knows what the standard is and all that. And so then he knows Krishna's doing something, so he wants to see that goes on nicely. Bhishma decided to wait until Arjuna's chariot moved off again before giving the order to charge. Yudhishthira was also holding his forces in check, so there was no need for immediate action. So if both sides are holding back, then we can see what's going to go on now. And also then as Krishna speaks Gita, then that means everybody on the battlefield can hear this, and they can all get that spiritual benefit before they fight. Krishna now smiled more broadly. He was pleased that Arjuna, his best friend, was ready to accept him as teacher and guide. Holding up his hand in blessing, he said, "Although you are speaking learned words from the scriptures, you are still mourning for something unworthy of grief. A wise man laments neither for the living nor the dead. Both you, I, and all these assembled Kshatriyas have always existed and will always exist. We are eternal souls passing from body to body. Even in this life, we see how the body changes, even though we remain the same person. In the same way, death comes. We are given a new body. A self-controlled person is not bewildered by such a change." So Krishna's point being made is that the souls are eternal. Krishna's eternal, the souls are eternal. And so they may change bodies, but they're still the same soul. So he's saying, oh no, but Grandfather Bhishma, that's just the form that he's in now. The soul, he's not going to die. And so he gives the example is that you're going to, in this lifetime, you're changing from one body to the next. You can say, no, it's the same body. No, it's not. It means when you're born, you're this big. Where is that body? It's not there. Then there's a body this big, then one this big, then one this big. Like that. And so, therefore, it constantly goes. Even modern science will say every moment the body's changing. So if the soul is in the body, the soul is constant, and the body is constantly changing, when this body gets to the point where it doesn't function anymore, the natural thing is there'll be another body, and the soul will continue. So that's the whole thing, is Krishna is shifting the focus from the body to the soul and its fraternal relationship with Krishna. So that's the point that's being missed by Arjuna here. And that's why Bhishma doesn't have a problem, because he's eternally Krishna's servant. So whether he's carrying on in this particular pastime here, or he changes body, he will still continue to do his service to Krishna, so there's no loss there. Kneeling at Krishna's feet, Arjuna felt immediate relief. As usual, Krishna had gone straight to the heart of the matter. Arjuna listened attentively as Krishna continued, "O son of Kunti, happiness and distress come and go constantly like winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception alone. O Bharata, and one should tolerate them without being disturbed. A person capable of such tolerance is eligible for liberation from all misery. The great seers who know the truth have concluded from the careful analysis that the soul and spiritual reality are unchanging, and the temporary material body is ultimately without any basis in truth. Right? Because it's always changing. So you can say, no, this is the thing, but then the next moment it's adjusted. The soul pervades the body and is indestructible. No one can destroy the immeasurable and eternal soul. But the body is sure to come to an end. Therefore, fight without any compunction for your relative's body, O Arjuna. Right? Because they're going to live on like that. It's even known as that for Kshatriyas. They win on the battle. They win their kingdom and the wealth and everything that goes with it. And if they die on the battlefield, they go to the heavenly planets and enjoy their, you know, much better facilities. So there's no problem for them. They don't, and it's been said many times before, you know, for them it's this or that. It's just that it's here, so these things are considered, because the point is it's personal. We're people. God's a person, we're persons. Because he's an individual, we're individuals. Right? Because he's eternal, we're eternal. We're coming part and parcel of him. So therefore, then on the relationships you're dealing in now is that, but then once you get beyond that, then the eternal relationships, you don't have to worry. But as long as you're here, you deal within this context. And so then you use the context, it, as you would in the spiritual world, to serve the Lord and deal in such a way. So Krishna's pointing this out. And so good and bad comes on its own. You don't have to, like, bad comes on its own. You don't have to worry about looking for it. It comes on its own. Same way good comes on its own without looking, like that. We just notice when the bad comes and not when the good comes on it. The good comes on its own. Wow, see what I did? Yeah. You know, if the bad comes, why am I getting this? You know, what did I do to deserve? So that's the whole thing, is we're not saying that bad comes because you've done bad work in the past. Good comes because you've done good work in the past. So the results are going to be there, you know. So it's not bewildering like that. So that's why he's saying the seers of the truth, they aren't bewildered by these things. Arjuna understood well enough what Krishna was saying. The soul was surely eternal. But was that a good argument to use when he was about to kill? Death and subsequent rebirth were painful experiences for the soul. Right, so the aspect, it means the soul's eternal, and that they're going to get a new body, but still, he's pointing out that the death itself and birth itself are a problem. Birth, death, old age, and disease, these are problems. People try to overcome these problems. But as we see when we go through the Gita, the only solution is to take up an eternal, solution to this. That if you leave this body absorbed in Krishna, thinking of Krishna, then you go to the spiritual world where you won't keep changing body. Everybody around you doesn't change body, so therefore the relationships there carry on the eternal platform. Out of love for Arjuna and understanding his doubts, Krishna said, neither he who thinks the living entity the slayer, nor he who thinks it is slain, is in knowledge. For the self slays not, nor is slain. For the soul, there is neither birth nor death at any time. He is never created, unborn and never existing. He is not slain when the body is slain. Knowing this, how can you ever be the cause of anyone's death? Because he's pointing out, you're saying you're going to kill all your relatives, but you're not, because the soul can't be killed. Like that. So you're not killing anybody here. Right? Because he's looking at it, so you could. It's not a matter of, oh, but then we could use that for doing anything. But the point is this, no. Is here is that he's a Kshatriya, his duty is this, and if war isn't on the cards, that's what they do. So he's performing its duty, but the point being is that you don't have to worry performing your duty is causing a problem, because it is your duty, otherwise someone has to deal with these things. You can say, as you know, again, oh, but you know, free and everyone live. Why is it there? Why is there freedom? Because no one will go there and bother you. Right? Because you see in places where Kshatriyas aren't doing their duties, it's just civil wars and riots and this and that, and no one's peaceful. But you see where it's strong, that others won't come and bother you, therefore then, you know, so much freedom is there. So one has to know where the basis for anything comes from. Indeed, the body's death allows the soul to receive a new body, just as a person puts on new garments after discarding the old. Right? So he's making that point, is that then, you know, you're talking about Bhishma and Drona, they're old, like that, you know. So therefore, then they'll get a young body, and then that would be nice for the soul. he's pointing. These aren't technically, these are just some logical presentations that he's giving. He's coming from Shankya and some other aspects. He's not discussing yet from devotional service, because you see here he's just countering his arguments. He's just saying Shastra, and he's counting with other aspects of Shastra that are higher, a higher understanding. He's talking karma. Krishna's talking jnana, or knowledge, you know, about the platform of the soul. The other's talking about good work, you know, like that. But he's talking about, no, about the knowledge of the soul. But still, you have to go beyond that to knowledge of devotion and your relation with God. That will come up after he's cleared this doubt and he's gotten off this moralistic point. Then he can take him to the higher level. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.